Four Midwest Guys presents...
No such thing as spirit.
There's a strength to him.
But is he ready?
Teach me.
Doctor Strange. Revelations.
Be careful which path you travel down, Strange. Stronger man than you have but the way.
Oh, you think you see through me, do you? And you don't.
Fight like your life depended on it!
Because one day, it may.
Hello, everybody. It's the Dirty Jay-Z. That's right. We are here to talk about the 1964 classic Doctor Strange Love. That's right. The movie where Peter Sellers plays three different roles
War. It's not Doctor Strange. It's not Doctor Strange Love.
Oh, Jesus. Where have I been?
Where the hell you been?
Okay. Oh, wait.
You just said Dr. Strange.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Pardon me, everyone. So, all right.
Let the guy toast one time.
It's been so long since I've been back, guys. I don't know.
Where the hell you been?
Apparently 1964. So
you traveling with Doc Brown these days?
I am. I feel like somebody just put me in a time spiral. I just went right back into the
60s.
Yeah.
Go back to the 60s.
So, oh, okay. Here are my notes. I'm back.
anytime now.
Benedict Cumberbatch is sorcerer Dr. Stephen Strange, who has to stop a rogue group of sorcerers from bringing an ancient evil to Earth in the newest Marvel adaptation of Doctor Strange, which we will actually be discussing instead of the 1964 Doctor Strange Love on this new edition of Four Midwest Guys. Hello again and welcome, loyal listeners. The gang is back again. That is right. I am the Dirty Jay-Z, and I am joined...
I think he's okay. Hold on, he's gagging. Clear.
Welcome, everybody. I am the Dirty Jay-Z, and with me today are our other true believers, Mr. Brian Ankenbauer.
What's up?
Our founder and head cheese of the Four Midwest Guys universe, B. Willie.
What is going on?
And B. Willie's bro, Aaron.
You do realize that's probably not going to be edited out, right?
I don't care.
Okay. As long as you're all aware of it.
And because of a venue change tonight, we have an absentee member who I've actually received her notes, and that is the always proud wife of the Dirty Jay-Z, the lovely and tolerant Stephanie, who is here in spirit and also in notes as well. So we are here to talk about Doctor Strange, the latest Marvel adaptation, because it's been... basically since Suicide Squad, since we talked about a movie, everyone, hasn't it?
A comic book movie adaptation.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, you know, a good 2 months, so we've been overdue for a comic adaptation.
Well,
so.
With the current pace of the industry, it's actually been a gap.
Yeah. I mean, a huge gap.
We're used to almost every other month at this point, right?
I mean,
well, at least through the summer, anyway.
I mean, if I don't have another superhero movie next month, I'm going to feel like they aren't catering to my inner nostalgic nerd here.
Well, really, when you think about it, 2016 has been one hell of a year for a comic.
What's really been funny about it, it's been 2016 has actually been the year that comic book adaptations have been kind of turned on their heads. I mean, let's think about it. We've had Batman v Superman making everything dark and evil.
Wasn't terrible.
Depending on who you ask. We've had Deadpool, which has basically been, hey, we can make an R-rated movie incredibly successful.
While also slightly parodying other...
and a slight parody of other comic adaptations.
That's like 16 walls.
That's like 16 walls we just broke there. We've got Suicide Squad being a successful DC adaptation. That's
nice
a
teenage pop hit.
It's a teen pop R-rated movie.
We have a lot of characters we hadn't seen kind of like on the big screen at all.
So it's been kind of an awkward year. Oh, and we've kind of gone back to an old format of sucky X-Men movies this year as well. I mean,
it was okay. Like I said, I think if we hadn't had Civil War right before it. And,
oh yeah, we had angsty Marvel. Now we're getting into angsty Marvel instead of like poppy fun Marvel too with Civil War.
It can have its ups and downs.
Yeah.
So it's trying to broaden its emotional range a little bit.
So we've kind of had like the format turned on their ears this year. So, and with that being said, we enter into Marvel's first foray into the fully fantasy universe with Doctor Strange. So we are, of course, talking about the Dr. Stephen Strange from the Marvel Comics, and not the Batman villain known as Dr. Hugo Strange, who, right. That would be kind of odd to have his own standalone movie.
I'd be okay with it.
That'd be funny, but I don't know if it...
I would like it, probably, but not everybody would.
It would be a very obscure reference in the DC universe.
I like him in Gotham, anyway.
Yeah. All right, so as a quick little summary of our movie here. Famous surgeon Dr. Stephen Strange loses the use of his hands due to a dangerous car accident and seeks out different ways to restore them. And his search leads him to a mystic Tibetan monastery where he learns to balance mystic arts, chakras, and alternate dimensions to become the sorcerer Dr. Strange. Meanwhile, renegade sorcerer known as Caecilius is trying to open the gateway to Earth for a supreme evil known as Dormammu, and it's up to Strange and the other sorcerers to stop these plans. That's basically the movie in a nutshell. So, I think we'll just pass it around here. Ankh, is it worth seeing on a scale of 1 to 10? How worth seeing is it?
And this is our spoiler-free section.
Yes. So.
Yeah, I would say it's a 9. Worth seeing. Mm. I saw it twice today.
Yeah. That's cool.
So, very worth seeing.
Well, not very. I wouldn't say it's very worth seeing. I went and saw it this morning with Aaron and Brian here.
Yep.
And then my daughter was mad because I didn't take her, so I had to go see it tonight with her.
But you didn't put up an opposition as if it really wasn't worth seeing.
Way to be a good dad.
Yeah.
Take
yeah.
it on the chin yes. and yeah. see a movie you wanted to see again.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing a movie you wanted to see again.
Gosh darn, I have to do something I enjoy.
Oh, hey, I got to see this movie. Oh, hey. Aaron, let's scale 1 to 10. How worth seeing would you rate
I would give it a 10.
10? Oh, okay. Mr. Brink?
I would give it 8.5 to a 9. It's, 0.5? It's up there.
0.5 to a 9?
8.5
to a 9. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'd give this like a 9, 9.5 because I dig the trippy universe. Like, the second I saw the trailers and the world bending, that had me sold, and this movie didn't disappoint.
Okay.
So, all right. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as like, overall story, acting of the crew, directing, all that sort of, like, the basic above-the-line stuff. Well, how would you rate that?
I would say, Cumberbatch and the hero side of things, I'd probably give it close to an 8 or a 9. So, slightly disappointed with Mendelsohn, and we'll get into that later. So, taking that into consideration, I'll actually bump it down to about a 7 because of the Mendelsohn. I was just a little disappointed. I was expecting more. I just had higher expectations. That's all.
So. Okay. So, Hank?
I think the acting was fine. Acting probably was about 8 or 9. The story-wise, though, needed a little bit more for me. So probably about a 6. On the story side, yeah.
All right. So combining the story and acting and directing and all that would be an overall...
7.
7. Okay. Fair enough.
For me, it'd probably be about a 9. I really enjoyed the casting for this film. I think the acting in it was done really well. I think you could have technically kind of sped up some of the earlier bits of the plot, but at the same time, this is kind of going back to kind of a standalone film where you really have to introduce the character, and right. So you can't really have what you had with, like, say, Winter Soldier, where all the characters are fully developed, or, like, Civil War, where...
So we're going back to, like, first Iron Man,
yeah, essentially, you know, like,
first Avenger, Captain
America.
I
mean, this is the first kind of step into, like, the more mystic side of the Marvel Universe, and it does kind of slow down the pace to kind of reintroduce everything.
Yeah.
So overall, I'd probably still give it an 8, though.
Yeah. I think it's about, like, the rating I'll give it. I'd give it an 8. Acting-wise, you know, we're not seeing Robert Altman ensemble cast. I mean, but for a Marvel Universe, the acting is very good. I mean, you've got wonderful actors in Tilda Swinton, Benedict Cumberbatch, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and, you know, Rachel McAdams. I mean, they're all fantastic actors. And you can tell they're having a good time here. And they're also, they're not just saying, hey, I'm here for the paycheck. They're actually getting into the characters and having fun with it. And as far as the story goes, I mean, I have a soft spot for this kind of, like, Karate Kid entering the universe of, you know, the Eastern world and learning of chakras and, you know, defense like that. I got a soft spot for that kind of story. Yeah, so it really kind of is. And so I kind of dug that part of it. I sat there, like, listening to all this stuff about, listening to these talk about alternate dimensions and the all this, and it just kind of appealed to me. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's overall 8 for story, 8 for acting, and Directing, I gotta give it kind of a plus because, Ank, I remember you were there watching this movie with me and Stephanie. This is from the same director of the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still. So that's leaps and bounds above that movie.
True. It is definitely way above.
There wasn't much to that movie. Yeah,
we didn't have Jaden Smith giving us a reason to destroy the universe.
I agree.
All right. So, that in mind, I mean, now that we've gotten the fundamentals of filmmaking out of the way, how about the stuff that appeals to the kid in us? How about the action scenes there, Aaron?
I actually really love the action scenes of this. I was actually amazed by how well the integrated, like, the magical concepts into, like, really kind of fast-paced kind of fight scenes. Like, it was done really well. That, I mean, you kind of have just an almost, like, lightsaber-like effects from, like, how they actually use, like, the magical weapons on this. And I think they actually make, like the villains' like weapons actually a bit more clear, just so you kind of avoid that kind
of you're gonna get, like, the
contrasting sort of,
it's like
a lightsaber
glass spear or whatever that they're using.
Yeah, it's almost similar to, like, the mirror dimension thing they kind of set up.
Oh god!
So, like, but
spoiler free now.
No, it's not.
But I can clearly see why they set it up that way to kind of avoid having that similarity drawn. But overall, I was actually really impressed with how fast paced this was. Because going into it, that was a concern. It might be kind of a bit more slow.
That it wasn't going to have, like, the great action scenes.
Yeah, like, you know, it was going to have, like, a lot of kind of talking heads, like, and I cast fireball sort of thing.
So, like, Harry Potter, I cast a spell on you. I block your spell.
Like, if you compare
Expelliarmus or whatever.
You compare, like, the fight scenes Latin in this to, like, you know, any of the Harry Potter films, it is much more fast.
So to satisfy, like, kind of the logical nerds listening, like, on a scale of 1 to 10 numerically, you would rate it as a...
Oh, I would definitely rate the action scenes as a 10. Okay. Especially once you start getting into all the environmental warping involved with it as well.
All right. Brain?
Action sequences, I'll give it a 9.5 to a 10. It's up there. I thought it was pretty well choreographed, especially when they throw in the special effects with it. And I don't want to give anything away, but yeah, so definitely 9.5 to a 10. So,
yep, I give it a 9.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I am going to give this a 10.
Okay.
Because, you know, we've seen the trailers. We've seen those shots where we have four angles of New York City. There is this beautiful sequence in that. And the opening sequence where they're in England, it's just, oh god. I mean, it was one of those scenes, it was one of those moments where I was glad I bought the 3D glasses for it, because when they were just spinning the worlds around and adding the extra depth to it, I mean, it was everything that you wanted to see in 3D, and just, it was the reason you go to the movies. Mm-hmm. You know, you go there for a spectacle. You go there for a show. And it's the reason you see stuff like The Dark Knight, and you want to see that, you know, tanker chase scene, you know, going after the armored car, or, you know, just, or you go to see Inception. You want to see that hallway fight. It gave you something to see on the screen. So it's a 10 for me. Good. All right. And going into these effects, on a scale of 1 to 10. Ank?
I would give it probably about a 10. I mean, the special effects were phenomenal.
I agree. It's a 10. It's Inception meets Marvel. I mean, I don't know how you not give it a 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard not to. I mean, that's kind of ahead of the curb in terms of, like, what we're seeing out there. Mm-hmm. Like, you could... It'd be hard to do the same thing even with animated films.
I agree, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so... And I'm going to go out on a limb again. This is another 10 for me. These are the best effects I have seen in a movie since Inception. Like, I mean, that's like 6 years ago. I mean, we've had some good visual effects films since then, some stuff that's kind of pushed the limit. This movie really gave us something to see on the big screen. That, to me, is what a visual effects movie is it gives you something to just envelop yourself in this world and just makes you see something new you haven't seen before. So this actually took you back to the time of how they do that. I wanted to see how they did that. So
took the movie Inception
and injected it with fucking adrenaline.
And just placed Marvel characters in front of the screen.
That's kind of what, yeah, except, you know,
it's Inception, we'll talk about it more in spoiler, but it's Inception on steroids in a sense. I mean, this was like, you know, performance enhanced Inception.
Copy that.
This is really great. All
right, so I don't know about you, Aaron. I mean, I know you've probably read these comics a lot more than us. I mean, we don't
know
what...
Actually, I never really got into the Doctor Strange comics.
Okay,
like,
that's
one of those things, like, I kind of came in this...
So,
like, all right. Maybe seeing a few references here or there, but more or less, being kind of unfamiliar with, like, a lot of the cast.
Yes, yeah, so I don't know about you guys. I mean, I'm not as familiar with Strange as a comic character. I don't know this universe as well.
I think I've seen him in maybe a couple. I think he might have appeared in a Spider-Man episode in the 90s, maybe.
That would be the extent of what we would
notice. So, yeah, it's kind of a blank canvas, so it's hard to answer that question, but I thought Cumberbatch did a good job with it, and I thought he's pretty much, if there's going to be a Strange, Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah, channel. Like, for this generation, like, I couldn't think of anyone who could do it as well. Like, I think one of the things, like, going forward, like, the same way we look at Robert Downey Jr. and think, oh, that's Iron Man.
Right.
I think we're going to be looking at Cumberbatch and be like, that's Doctor Strange.
Well, essentially, it's also like, you know, the character of Tony Stark as well, where we have the smarmy, you know,
there are very similarities.
1% of the world who is top of their game that's knocked down off their pedestal and has to, you know,
there are a lot of similarities in that way.
Right, and kick their ego out of their way to become this perfect character, which Strange kind of does, but Stark is still struggling with throughout his movies.
Yeah, you can make an argument that watching this film, and not to get too spoilery on it, but there's a lot of scenes where you kind of look at this character as like, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, in some ways. Well, he's got the that arrogant.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it away, but, you know.
Well, it's also a lot like his character in Sherlock in the BBC series. I mean, if you ever really watch the show, the guy's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a fun asshole to watch.
He's a bigger asshole in Sherlock.
asshole in Sherlock.
So, yeah.
So that said, since we're all kind of starting to talk about some more spoiler-esque aspects of the show, I guess.
Spoiler alert.
Mr.
Spoiler alert!
Yes, you normally start your
just
alarm
have
at this time.
One
or
going
normally,
on.
Normally, I haven't been playing it lately. I should pull it. I need to pull it back out of the archive.
Should I give you like a space so you can pull it out?
Yeah, I'll just have to make a mental note of where to put it. I'll forget actually. So there you go. Spoiler alert!
Right,
Spoiler alert! This is not a drill. So yeah, from this point forward, you've been warned. So
I still hate that fucking alarm.
You love that alarm.
No, I hate that alarm.
You
love it.
You know, you should
I'm gonna take
his phone.
It, put it, yeah.
And when he has an alarm, he has to set for the next
wakes
morning.
Up in the morning. He'd be like, fucking Death Star, motherfucker. All
right. So Strange dies at the end of this movie, for spoilers.
Wow, way to give it away.
Yeah, like eight or nine times.
Yeah, he dies. I don't know how many goddamn times in this movie.
Yeah, like, they kind of set it up in this sort of where they're just kind of going through it really quickly, and
I actually kind of found it annoying. It was like Groundhog Day.
Oh, no, I loved that ending.
I loved it.
Not only do you have a superhero who's actually solving, like, his world's problems by actually trying to negotiate it, but it was clever, and it didn't come across as anticlimactic.
You know what?
Which could be done, which is really hard.
You know, and it's also something that's, like, it's a battle of intellect, you know, whereas you have, like, instead of, like, having, which I hate to say it, I mean, I remember reading this review in, like, 2009 when Avatar ended, it's like, okay, Act 3 is another war. How many Act 3s of movies have always ended with war, you know, battle, you know, army versus army, it's a battle. This is literally a battle of mindsets, where it's a battle of Strange's...
Well, I think a lot of it comes back to, like, the Lord of the Rings film, because that kind of
set
the standards.
Yeah, it really did set the standards, but this one just kind of, like, it's a one-on-one face-off, and it's, you know, wittiness versus power, and it's the fact that this guy's intellect overpowers a universal threat.
Well, I think it's, you don't have a choice. I mean, he's going up against the devil, in a manner of speaking.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, this is a character that is kind of loosely based off, like, Faustus, or, like, Dr. Faust, so.
So we saw Spider-Man selling his soul to him, right?
No.
Or making a deal with him?
Is that how that worked out?
Oh, shit. You should... Okay, so if you want to watch Lean Kara's review of One More Day by Spider-Man, yes, Spider-Man makes a deal with the devil in the Marvel comic universe.
don't think I read that.
Let's hope they don't adapt that.
Yeah, that's going to be Amazing Spider-Man number 3. That's
that's not in Homecoming? No?
You know, it's actually kind of fitting now that Disney bought out Marvel.
And then the deal with the devil is, give me a good prom date.
Zendaya playing Mary Jane. She's like, I only did nothing but, you know, Disney shows. Now I'm in Spider-Man.
Thank you for making a deal with us, Mr. Parker.
Well, I bet you would love that comment. You know that? Anyway, all right.
I honestly forgot where we were talking about.
Oh, like, Dormammu's showdown with Doctor Strange at the end. And I thought it was really cool and refreshing. And just the fact that it was... It's a showdown we really kind of haven't seen in a movie.
Well, not just that. Like, you get Dormammu as, like, this kind of giant, like, almost Galactus-like entity in this instance. And throughout the entire film, you see Strange being more or less overpowered.
Right.
Like, he's new to the whole magician world.
Yeah,
like,
he's brand new to this world. I mean, he's basically a fledgling sorcerer.
Well, yeah, he's like the absent-minded sorcerer in a way. But I don't know. I found the devil thing, whatever, and Brian, I think you had a similar thing. I felt a little underwhelmed by the
yeah, guy. He did seem very underwhelming.
I mean, I would say it's even... And I'll throw it out there. He reminds me of the big bad cloud and the Green Lantern.
No.
Parallax.
Yeah.
Well, okay, at least on the upside, we're used to seeing... I mean, we saw a face in this. We never saw a face in Green Lantern.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
We saw fucking fart cloud is what we saw.
There was a face in Green Lantern.
All right, yeah, yeah.
I feel like this
is a
builds up to Dormammu way better
Dormammu
than Green Lantern did,
too. Dormammu had facial features, at least, you know?
Like, I think it's the things surrounding it that make it a lot better on Dormammu. Plus, he actually seems... Like, Dormammu's clearly a more powerful... Like a powerful entity that just is stuck in that weird thing.
He's like a psychedelic version of the. To me, it was a psychedelic version of what I saw.
There's a lot.
But this movie is nothing but psychedelic.
True. I'll give you that.
Like I'm thinking, like almost anyone that's seen this, like at least considered like what this would look like in an altered state.
You know what? Okay.
I think they've been better off. Honestly, I think they've been better off if he had changed form into at least made him on the same.
I'll tell you this. Okay, yeah. What I think should have been done is like every screening that had 3D glasses for this, they should have had special brownies for everyone going into it too. By the time it kicks in, you're already in like this mirror universe, and you get to Dormammu, and you already think you're on a bad trip.
Well, that's in Colorado. There's special theaters in Colorado where that happens.
Okay, so we've had like legalized theaters for about like 4 or 5 states to see this.
It's a fledgling, you know, business, but it's getting there.
Yeah, I don't know. It was good. It was fine for what it was. I don't know. Big bad cloud.
But to be fair, I mean, a lot of villains in Marvel movies, outside of Loki, who's been good? Who's been memorable?
No, that's a common
thing. Who's alive?
You pretty much have Red Skull and Thanos.
Right, but again, who's outside alive after their appearance?
Just Thanos.
Don't get me wrong, I like the movie, but it is a flaw that continues through Marvel movies.
Oh yeah, it definitely is.
And this one is no exception.
Like, if you look at, what is it, Calcius?
Hang on.
Calcius?
Mads?
Caecilius. Yeah. Caecilius. I actually had like a phonetic breakdown in my script here to how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, because even after listening to it multiple times, you're just like, and... That
Cal.
Thing.
It's like that Benedict Cumberbatch. It's like that Benedict Cumberbatch line. It's like, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Caecilius.
I don't remember, like, as good as an actor as he did in this performance, which he, like, I can't say anything about that. It is kind of underwhelming as a character, even though you do get some decent motivation.
I don't think he was given a lot in his defense, but
he does have a couple decent monologues.
Yeah, I like the one line's really good. He's got some good one-liners.
Okay, I want to know, though, how many Marvel villains actually killed somebody in the opening act of a film?
But even that was...
He shows up and like decapitates somebody.
Yeah, I know. He takes the head off the librarian.
And then, you know, he's...
Isn't it weird there was no blood splatter for that while we're talking
scene? But here's the thing.
Like, I understand it's a Disney/Marvel film.
It's Disney, but it's also 2016's PG-13. Had this been the PG-13 of like the late 1980s or early 90s, There would have been a little bit more blood, yes.
Like just a little thing.
Yeah.
Splatter.
Yeah.
Something. I think there's like a...
They never really gave the justification to, like, why there's no blood splatter when anyone can stab.
I think it's not so much Marvel as it is the MPAA. Because they have some really weird...
kind of guidelines now.
Like, if we want to get, like, really into it, the MPAA, you can show a man's penis on screen and it'll get an R rating. But if the man's penis is erect, it instantly becomes an X-rated film. Like, flat out, not even NC-17.
We are talking about Doctor Strange, right?
That's right. Benedict Cumberbatch has, like, a raging hard-on like, in 3D.
What the fuck are we talking about now?
We're talking about, like... Well,
Doctor Strange love, baby.
Mm-hmm. That's some strange love right there.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
It's just the MPAA.
Released in, what, two weeks? 3 weeks?
It's probably already out there.
No, that's the DC universe of Doctor Strange.
I am behind on my time. Missing things left and right.
No, it's just the MPAA's restrictions on, like, you know, what classifies a PG-13 or an R or an X or PG or whatever. And it's just kind of
playing into the guidelines a bit.
Kind of. And it's kind of weird as to, like, how PG is playing now versus, like, the PG that kind of we grew up with of, like, you know, the Gremlins, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Roger Rabbit. That was some graphic stuff that we grew up with in our PG. Mm. PG now is Inside Out.
All right, so where are we going next here?
Well, so going next, I mean, as far as like Mads Mikkelsen, that guy is just like nothing but a villain to me. I mean,
right?
It's Hannibal Lecter that's gotten like sorcerer powers and
that's what I expected.
He should be like swinging a rope on Doctor Strange's nuts.
And that's what I
you didn't see Casino Royale.
No, apparently not.
Yeah, okay, so basically Mads Mikkelsen's in that movie, and there's a scene where he's just, like, swinging this rope, and, like, you see, like, a really male painful scene in that film where he's torturing James Bond.
Okay.
It's a good movie, but if I describe that scene, it's like
I think you're beginning to obsess yourself with male genitals. I'm just saying. But,
this is the last time he hosts.
Sometimes an airplane is just an airplane in a dream.
That's a long shaft. Now, okay, so...
Nice microphone here.
Yeah.
Where are we?
I expected that same performance, I guess. I went in with really high expectations for Mads, and I thought him with the sorcerer using a little bit of that would have been cooler to see, but again, he served the purpose.
I don't know. In his defense, like the roles he does have, the lines he does have, he delivers them really well.
Oh yeah,
it's just I think the character is a bit more of a zealot than the like a standalone villain. Like he's a setup for Dormammu. In a lot of ways,
right? But in both instances, I just kind of felt very. Static.
It's essentially static, like
would be the word.
As far as like Marvel villains are concerned, it's essentially like Blue or Purple Face is in Guardians of the Galaxy to what Thanos is. Yeah, yeah, it's very similar. But it's
not only in like characters like plot line, but also like in eye makeup.
Right, right. Yeah, and our purple,
yeah,
you know, references there. But you know, if there's a flaw that Marvel has over DC, it's the fact that outside of like a couple, like a handful of villains, their villains aren't incredibly memorable, and that's actually been a very big problem in their movies.
Mm.
Is that outside of Loki, who do we remember in the Marvel universe?
Yeah, and that's something that we still have an issue with this film.
Oh yeah,
in a lot of ways. Don't get me wrong, and you can maybe count Dormammu or Mordor by the end of it, but.
Mordor, I think, has promise, and that's what I loved about.
Well, that's because he's the main villain in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I did. I like that twist at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But we were actually going. It was when you were talking about that earlier. We were talking about the connection between that and like Sinestro and the Green Lantern film.
Yeah,
because it actually is kind of.
It's the same. It's the same kind of thing, right? The twist right at the end, where it's like the good guy becomes the bad guy because he all of a sudden has a difference of opinion of the.
Yeah, like he just has kind of a change of heart, but he was like the most like rigid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of soldier-esque kind of
rigid
person.
Rigid or rigid?
Rigid.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh, it's
awesome. I was going to say, this is actually like the second parallel we've drawn between Doctor Strange and Green Lantern.
Mm.
And what's funny is Green Lantern has gotten so much derision amongst the fans of the comic and everyone else. And then we've got this movie, which is getting a lot of support. Like, audiences have, like,
well, given because a good one's DC and one's Marvel.
Well, not only that, I
hey, you got a fair point from on a that writing one. Standpoint, I don't think, there is some better. I
it's a quality of movie.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, this one had a bunch of stuff going for it ahead of time, where it actually had a script, where opposed to Green Lantern, kind of was on the fly.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue with the Green Lantern film is that they should have spent more time making sure the script was at least finished before they started shooting.
Yeah,
because they
yeah.
they DC could have made that a great film.
Yeah, it was still really good. I still liked it.
Like, you even just look at like the Cartoon Network series of Green Lantern, like the little CGI. Oh
god, Green Lantern has a buffet of awesome backstory. And
the funny thing is, like, you can make Green Lantern like the most impressive thing in the DC universe.
Talk about universe world building.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most expansive thing in the DC universe.
Yeah, which, and you know, since he's not here, I have to point this out. I remember at one of our late gatherings about 6 years ago, Bershy actually said he enjoyed the Green Lantern movie too. So yeah, before there was a hater bandwagon that he was able to read about, he did publicly say, and I'm going to put this on record here, did say he enjoyed the Green Lantern.
Yeah, and it wasn't bad.
It's not a bad movie, really. It's a fun movie.
I mean, it's just kind of okay. Yeah. It's not going to win any awards, but it's not just that.
I mean, I think it's one of those movies that, you know, the fans kind of got up in arms too early over it.
Yeah, you know? Can make an argument for it. Like,
I think it was an expectation thing, honestly.
Oh, yeah, exactly, part of it. Because, once again, we're going about a property that had the potential to be one of the biggest things in, like, the DC universe, film universe anyway. And, yeah, it really kind of rush-jobbed a lot of it.
Which I think would be kind of funny to imagine how that movie would be made in the DC cinematic universe of today, where how dark would those greens be in this movie? Well, like, it would almost be black.
Well, I mean, you go into, like, the actual comics for Green Lanterns, and, like, you have the entire Red Lantern Corps.
Well, if you get to, like, Spectre or everything, I mean, I really wish, I mean, it's as good as Hal Jordan is, I kind of wish there was a Kyle Rayner adaptation, because to me, he's my favorite Green Lantern. But I digress. We're talking about Doctor Strange.
I was going to say, we need to.
We're talking about Doctor Strange.
It's a tangent.
I can get into my, you know, Green Lantern thing. So, if some points I wanted to bring up, and since, you know, my wife who went to see this, who she loves the DC movies, she loves everything about it. She went to see Doctor Strange with me. She's also a registered nurse, and I want to bring this up. There were scenes in this movie.
She loves the DC movies or Marvel movies?
Oh, no, she loves the Marvel movies. She gave the middle finger to DC.
You said DC.
Oh, did I say? Oh,
she did say DC.
Okay, oh, okay.
Apparently jumping back between this and Green Lantern.
Yeah, jumping back between this and Green Lantern.
You are so in the doghouse.
No, my wife has given the middle finger to a lot of DC movies. Like, I showed her Suicide Squad, and she was like, oh god, I'm glad I didn't have to pay like full theater price to see this. Thank you for, you know, giving me something discounted. Or I took her to Batman v Superman. She was like,
You're just digging your hole, buddy. Just keep digging.
She loves the Marvel movies, the fact that they're on Stars all the time. Like, if I'm out working, I come back home, she's watching Age of Ultron for the fifth or sixth time. I'm like, it's not that good of a movie. Why are you watching?
Totally on the couch tonight, just saying. All right, go ahead.
So my wife, who's also a registered nurse and was actually a medical advisor to a couple of the other projects I've worked on, she's watching this movie, and there are scenes, because, you know, Stephen Strange, before he's in his accident, is a surgeon, so we've got a lot of ties to, like, you know, medical rooms and stuff. There are scenes in the surgical room, like the opening scene. There's a scene where he's operating on someone, and she's sitting there just, like, seething, going, why aren't they wearing masks? Why are they and they're not wearing masks? And then, like, there's other scenes afterwards where they're operating on the Ancient One, and they're, like just, like, spouting off dialogue between each other, and you're seeing their lips moving, and she's just, like, clenching her fist, going, you should be wearing masks!
Yeah, well, it's a continuity thing. Like, yeah.
There was.
When they had to do the dialogue, when Rachel McAdams had to do her dialogue, there was no mask.
Yeah, it was that
and
first scene.
And they just cut, and all of a sudden they all had their mask on.
Yeah, you could tell. Yeah.
It was funny. Like, but when Cumberbatch had to do his scene, when he was guessing the music, when they're doing the first procedure with a bullet, they had a mask on the entire time, and you could hear him talk.
Right,
but obviously she wasn't coming through.
Right, yeah.
maybe it was like a contract stipulation where she's like, I'm not getting enough facial time in this film.
Oh, God, I hope not.
No, seriously, this is probably in there. I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised.
Rachel McAdams, put your goddamn mask on. You're a surgeon. Get in there and be a surgeon.
Well, that and even in the opening scene, like, even a lot of the smaller cast members, like, in the surgical scenes didn't have masks on when they were actually doing dialogue.
Right. I mean, but...
Like, especially, like, when they're talking about, like the music thing about, like, the... What was the song? Do you remember?
Oh, God. It was a... Oh, it's a Chuck Mangione song.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't remember.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Feel so good or something like that. Yeah.
Like, even when they're doing that, like, you have, like,
the elevator music from Hell song.
I always see it as, like, season one of King of the Hill, when you thought Chuck Mangione was.
They had, in the megalo bar explosion. That was the Grey's Anatomy crowd. They didn't have their mask right behind glass.
It's just elevator music. If I go to hell and I get stuck in an elevator, that's the song that's going to play.
My song will be Drinkenstein from Rhinestone, sung by Sylvester Stallone.
The wiser you created the monster.
All right, let's bring it back. Bring it back. All right. Okay.
Almost won an Oscar.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So,
where are we going next, there, Mr. Host?
Oh, geez. That was the other thing too. That car wreck in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a stupid move on his part.
He's
right?
Fucking lucky. All he lost was his hands that shit. I mean,
and the entire
that was
time
like...
he's just self-centered and.
Yeah,
like, he could have done it so much.
I mean, that was like, you know, just
he kind of needs a HUD, like a HUD's up display, like, you know,
puts like,
it up
dude,
on the windshield for him.
Be glad you're alive.
What was odd was like they didn't even show who was driving the other car. Like that's why I was like, I thought
they didn't give a fuck.
I really thought like it was like done on purpose.
Yeah,
because he went around that car plain and simple. There was no, and all of a sudden right. It was. Boom, and they just tapped the end of him, and he spun.
And he's like spinning.
And I was waiting to see like if it was somebody like some kind of like play like somebody we'll see later on in the you know like they did it on purpose because they knew who he was.
No, it was
it was
the villain from Civil War.
But it was just weird because I was like,
well, you know, was it just okay? Two things that I thought about that as far as like the other car, I just saw like the scene playing out as like kind of. He was such a dick that he didn't care who the other driver
was.
Yeah,
like, he's speeding around, he's going around.
Yeah.
He's looking at his, like, little display thing when he actually gets interested.
Which, you know, funny little note, which I was, looking back on. Somebody actually says in that movie, when they're offering him, like, different cases to work on, 35-year-old veteran who was in a experimental suit of armor.
Yeah, it was War Machine.
It was War Machine. Like, holy shit, he
yeah,
just...
you were saying that to me.
Right.
Like,
it's like, yeah. so this is clearly post-Civil War that this is taking place in, so they're tying it into the universe, little bits at a time, but...
Yeah, Marvel doesn't usually backtrack on things too much, like, they try to keep it, like, linear.
Yeah,
I think that's actually kind of a good plan in some ways.
Although, to bring this up real, real quick, in Winter Soldier, and I think I was telling you this, Aaron, they actually mention Stephen Strange's name, because the scientist that that brought S.H.I.E.L.D. or created Hydra in S.H.I.E.L.D., you created that that algorithm that predicts current threats and future threats. Well, one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents goes, he started naming off names. He named off all the Avengers.
That's right, he did.
And then he said Stephen Strange.
That's right, he did.
So they've been planning it for a while.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I mean, they pretty much have, the next... seven films planned out.
Which is cool. I mean, it all
and the
connects,
next, like, four or five Stan Lee cameos already filmed.
Yeah. Oh, quick question. Like, this might be a little off topic, but this is actually, like, the first Marvel film that has the new sort of, like, introduction, right?
Oh my god, that intro!
Yeah,
that threw
me
for a loop when I saw that.
You hadn't seen it yet?
That's the
yet.
First time.
Wait, was that in Civil War?
Everybody,
No, it wasn't in Civil War. This was the first one we had, but it came out this summer and we talked about it.
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't remember talking about it.
I posted on our Facebook.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because like they had like a line of dialogue in front of each main character of the Avengers universe, like right in front of it. I mean, that's flat out script.
I'm not used to actually
format.
Having that in there. And then you have like the contrasting, like almost like metallic logo thing.
It's kind of weird. It almost looked like it was going to start the making of in front of that.
A little bit, right?
Yeah. It's like behind the scenes of the MCU.
what they said they were doing was they were trying to get away from the comic book movies.
Well,
to focus more on the movies that they've already created.
Bullshit.
To create the...
that's why we're podcasting. We're talking about the comics.
I'm just saying that's what they're talking
exactly,
about.
Yeah.
Caitlin even asked me, she goes, it's just the movie. She didn't know either because she's used to seeing that when they flip the pages. The
comics, yeah, like yes. It's a very traditional sort of thing. But I don't know, like it almost looks like they're just changing the logo, like almost seems like that's a transition to like a phase two sort of thing.
I think I would have kind of liked to see what they did, but have them do it within the like somebody open up a comic book.
It would have been
a little cool.
I'm actually, not against it, it's just an interesting transition that is like, yeah. I just feel like it's the beginning of like a new set of Marvel films.
Well, it would have been more, well, I think would have been kind of more, you know.
I'd have done that after I'm sorry, let me cut you off.
Age of Ultron, yeah.
Yeah, or after
After the actual phase two. Two of Marvel, not like in the middle of phase three.
Exactly. Yeah.
So. But you know, what would have been interesting is like if you actually had a scene where you have a still image of the comic and you pull it away like you're pulling back a page and you have a still image of the film, that would have been a good transition between film, you know.
Right, but they're trying to go away from the comics, that's what they said.
What, do you think they're gonna get Oscar recognition? It's not gonna happen.
That's what the article said.
So what are they going for?
They were trying to show what their catalog of movies that they already have produced, and that's what they're trying to use as their intro.
So that yeah okay.
So just so you can see and be like, oh, I haven't seen that one. I should go see that.
Yeah,
I think this might be like a award analysis for some bro that we might know or something down the road.
We might have to
pull
him back out of the closet.
No, he's not.
He's in the closet.
I think so.
That's so Hollywood.
I hear he's like, you know, just like eating a lot of weight gain or something right now. He's just trying to like beef up.
For
like
cake.
He's like trying to get up for the next 7 reps, bro. But another thing to kind of point up, this is the first time in the cinematic universe that we've actually seen like a full on like fantasy based character. Because even Thor, with like, you know, his ties to North mythology, even kind of had a bit of a, you know, scientific grounding with being another planet or something, or some kind of robotic.
Really heavily into that magic as like it's right. Kind of advanced technology.
This is our This is our first tie. Like
we do kind of tie that in a little bit as well with the ancient one, referring to like the ancient or ancient sorcerers refer to it as spells. But if that, you know, isn't for your modern sensibilities, you can just think of it as a program.
Mm-hmm.
So you do see that kind of tie in as well a little bit, but not like that's it. Like you don't have like the whole. Like circuit sort of magical things.
Although you do have the like the after credit scene with Thor, and Thor's like, so Earth has sorcerers now, almost like he's run into them before. And, you know, and elsewhere, like it's all part of Asgard, or I don't know if they're going to tie that in somehow. Because that is, you know,
Thor is the perfect gateway hero to tie Doctor Strange into the Marvel Cinematic Universe because of the fact that's kind of been so. Somewhat grounded in reality, and we've got someone that's such an outsider in fantasy.
I don't know, just like looking at how they did Doctor Strange, I'm just waiting for them to actually tie that into like having a scene with Iron Man.
Like, just oh, that's gonna be awesome. Yeah, that would be happens, dude. It's
like it's bound to happen eventually, but I'm looking forward to it.
Tony Stark meets Stephen Strange,
and another funny thing to think about since we've established that this is post, you know, Civil War. We have seen, you know, like, wormholes in universes opening with all these aliens pouring through and all this crazy shit in New York and everything happening. How is Stephen Strange going up to the Ancient One and saying, I don't believe in all this mystical stuff? It's like, dude, aliens fucking came from the sky. How is it that much of a stretch to believe?
Well, yeah, but there's a difference between aliens that live on other planets versus... spirituality and, you know,
chakras,
mystics.
And
that was to play his whole like he's a doctor and he believes in the matter and the physical stuff that he can do, as opposed to believing in that chakras and the all-seeing eye and everything else. And
to be honest, it's the classic theme of the intellect believing in the physical and versus the spiritual person believing in the, you know, the supernatural person.
Well, it's also interesting because...
the left brain versus the right brain.
Exactly. This actually, they play on this a little bit throughout the film, but it goes to that comparison between him and Calcius or whatever.
Call him Cal.
Celsius.
Cal.
Celsius.
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 Back to Celsius.
So Cal Celsius.
Yeah.
At 32 degrees Celsius.
Like, you kind of have that play of them being, like, very similar kind of personality types and, like, maybe kind of going down the same path. And when you have, like, Stephen Strange at the beginning or early in the film talking about how we're insignificant specks of dust through an indifferent universe, you have that repeated later on by cow. And you do see that kind of... Calvin. Yeah,
Calvin.
Sure. Calvin Celsius. It's whatever name we're giving him at the moment. Like, you do see that
Special
kind of...
Special K.
Like, it is an interesting dynamic that you have that character being kind of what Strange could have been in some ways.
Yeah, he could have been. Yeah, I guess.
Well, they even made that analogy in the very beginning.
Mm.
She's like, I've seen this
like
type
they
before.
They play on that like pretty heavily throughout the film.
I've seen this type before. I didn't want to train somebody else to have him do this, follow the same footsteps. Mm. I've already seen this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of, and going off of something you brought up before earlier, Hank, and I was talking to Steph about it, like, I loved the fact that this is a kind of an origin story, whereas you see Doctor Strange growing as a hero and learning all this mystic arts and everything. You're also seeing Mordo kind of, like, breaking away from the rigidity of, like, the world that he was involved in and just essentially becoming a villain. As you're seeing a hero rise, you're seeing a villain rise.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, he actually becomes a villain because of how rigid he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he just views that, you know, like, he changes his perception a little bit, but he still has that concept of, like, appealing to the natural world and making things right and in order.
Right.
What? But he's also, his turn starts with the betrayal. Like, when he finds out that she's been drawing
she's
from
been
the,
using from the dark arts,
side,
yeah.
Yeah, that's like, what the hell are you doing?
It's like, you taught us that was, you know, forbidden, that we should never use this.
And it goes back and it feeds into his unnatural,
yeah, like,
that's forbidden, should not be done.
Yeah, ever. Like, right. He has a very rigid personality and just that sort of mentality of, like, no, it's right is right, wrong is wrong.
And the whole black and white, there's no gray area.
Yeah. Which is exactly what makes a great villain, is that he sees in absolutes.
Like,
as a Sith would.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, very much so. Like, well, power, strength, yeah. And there is no peace, there is no, yeah, love.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, he's a character, another, like, he's following Disney. What he believes is right in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, the Sith believe that too. But anyway, yeah. All right. Not to make it a Star Wars podcast.
We're kind of jumping everywhere, to be honest. So.
That was a little bit of bring fan service there on
it
my
was.
End.
I appreciate you throwing me the nugget. I just don't want to be accused of bringing Star Wars into yet another.
Oh, no,
podcast.
I'm flat out admitting the fan service on my end on that one. All right. So I think we've kind of covered, like, just so much about the story. Is there anything else that we want to bring up before we start going into our roundtable discussions?
I don't know if it's necessarily story-based, but just, I think it's Brandon Wong that actually plays Wong, and I love
God, he was great.
Just every scene he's in. Like, don't wrong. Like,
don't you ever laugh.
Yeah, I love when he laughs at Marco Polo as Kublai Khan, but, like, he does such a great role.
And when he's listening
well.
To Beyonce as, like, Strange is stealing the books from behind him.
Like, he played just, like, such a good, like, straight man, like,
did,
for, like,
yeah.
some of the comedic elements. Like, and that thing actually had more than the trailers led on was the comedic element to it.
Right, which...
Like, there's way more in this film than you would guess from the trailer.
Well, the one scene I would like to talk about for just a second, and we kind of briefly, when he's in surgery on himself.
Oh, the...
That whole battle, the ghost battle, if you want to call it that.
Yeah,
that's pretty damn cool.
The astral plane battle.
Astral plane battle, I like that. I thought that was pretty sweet, and how when she zapped him, he, like, charged the other guy.
Yeah.
Which I actually found out, that actually was based on the scene from the comics.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. That was kind of... I kind of dug that. That was a cool
that
little twist.
Like, it was a weird scene, because you had that really kind of, like... moderately intense, like, ghost fight scene mixed with, like, the comedic elements of him zapping in and out and just freaking her out.
Yeah, she's jumping around.
It reminded me a lot of the Frighteners.
Yeah, I can see that.
When the ghosts were fighting and they, you know, bouncing through the walls.
Oh, yeah. The one with Michael J. Fox. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I just keep seeing the judge, like, humping a sarcophagus in that movie.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing I'd like to bring up real quick is just where we're going next, obviously. We find out that Thor is looking for Odin, which I believe Loki hit
He says Odin's
hit it,
missing,
didn't he?
Yeah.
That was the whole thing.
Do what?
Loki was sitting on the throne.
Yeah, like he was
at the end of
Dark
World.
Am I missing something?
Yeah. No, what he did
God,
was...
God, I wish Steph was here.
Loki put Odin somewhere, like threw him into one of the other realms.
Right.
So they have to find him. At the very end, Loki was pretending to be, because he can change anything,
so he's pretending to be Odin.
So is he just playing, is Thor still deceived?
No,
my question.
Thor realized, like, if you read through the comics, Thor realizes that Loki is pretending to be Odin.
So okay, for
I've just never seen it.
It could just be one of those things. Like maybe the actual next Thor film might start off a little before that scene.
I hope. Or
so for all of the fangirls out there that squee over Tom Hiddleston, and because he's essentially huge, it sounds like Tom Hiddleston might be coming back for all this.
I hope so. I've been clamoring to put him in Star Wars because he's
more
awesome.
Or less the best villain in the Marvel universe.
Because he's the only good villain. Yeah. He's the only interesting villain to watch. Mm. Hell, he's more interesting to watch in Thor than Thor is.
Oh, he steals the show. There's no doubt about it.
Well, because he's an actual character. He's more interesting.
I would love to see him as a Sith Lord, just saying.
But not only that, another interesting point that's brought up in this, by the end of the film, we have a new Infinity Stone.
We do. Eye of whatever.
Agamotto.
Eye of Agamotto, which, I don't know, since we're doing like all these Marvel movies, should we do like Infinity Stone Watch or Infinity Stone Alarm or something
Or because
we might have that set up like we might need to lead to Infinity War.
Because this is the big build-up into this like, you know, end of Phase 3 film.
But this Infinity Stone, if I remember right there, they go back and they give the history. The Master, whatever, was the one, and he was the one that used that amulet. So this Infinity Stone is actually what launched their whole mysticism realm.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's the gem of time.
So,
it played a large role in the beginning of sorcery on the planet.
Yeah, on the planet. So
as of right now, where we're at with all the Infinity Stones, because for all of our Marvel conspiracy theorists out there, because this is a big thing to consider, is that we've got one Infinity Stone that's basically in the forehead of Vision right now. Mm-hmm. We've got another...
That was the one that was in Loki's staff, right?
Right, that was the one that was in Loki's staff, that's which I had to like keep...
Intellect or something? I forget.
Like, it was of the mind or something? Something
My geekness is lacking right now. Yeah, I can't remember
the name of it.
So we've got that one that's in Vision... We've got the Tesseract, which...
Was the first one.
Which apparently, like, we haven't seen since, you know, Black Widow pushed it out of the the machine in the end of the first Avengers. Mm.
It was given to the Collector... No, that's given to the Collectors.
Which, I think, wasn't that taken back with Thor at the end of the Avengers?
It was.
On Asgard. Okay.
And that's why the Red One was given to Collector, because they didn't want... Two of them in the same spot.
Which came at the end of Thor the Dark World. So that's in the Collector's possession, which the Collector almost had the Power Gem, which was in Guardians of the Galaxy, which that is now sitting at the stronghold of...
Prime. Something Prime.
And Albert Nobbs's...
The main...
Glenn Close's basement.
Planet. Yeah. It's whatever it was, Prime. It's something Prime.
Anyway. Not Optimus. That's all I know.
That's where my mind. That's where my mind wants to go.
Exactly.
It's Nova Prime.
It's Nova Prime. Prime. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. So it's at the.
So it's with the Nova Corps.
With the Nova Corps. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got those four. Which at the time we knew that in order to complete the gauntlet, there was like five or six. So we had those four, and then with the Eye of Agamotto, we got that wonderful little line from Mordo.
There's six.
Where he says,
so there's one,
you should not so callously, not so callously be wearing an Infinity Stone on you. There's our fifth Infinity Stone right there as the Eye of Agamotto, the time gem.
The sixth one comes in the next Guardians movie.
So
why not? Thank God.
Go. Oh, they already said it was.
Yeah.
Well, okay, cool. Because, I mean, I don't... But the I like to be surprised when I go in, so I don't read all the...
But the gauntlet only has a spot for five stones, right?
No, it's got
all six.
It's got five and then a big six.
There's one for each knuckle and one right in the center.
The center, okay.
So at some point, Thanos is going to try to pull this out of Vision's head.
Yeah. But that could be a really cool scene.
It would be the end of Vision, but yeah.
That'll, you know... So we're going to kick, like, Tony Stark's new AI out and, like, put Jarvis right back in?
I hope so. His new AI sucks. Anyway.
Who doesn't want to listen to a hot British girl?
Like, in her head, though? Cool. Yeah, I'll give you that.
But, all right. So, with that said, let's just go right into our roundtable discussions. Does anyone have any favorite quotes from this movie?
I'll take the obvious one. Are you strange? Well, who am I to judge? That's probably the best line.
It's like, so, or was it like,
Mr.
Doctor.
Doctor.
Mr. Doctor. Actually, it's strange. All right, who am I to judge?
Who am I to judge? Yes, I thought that was pretty funny.
That was a great exchange.
I'm going to probably paraphrase a little bit, but the ancient one has a line of something along the lines of, you never leave your demons, you only learn to live above them. And I thought that was a really cool line.
The ancient one had some great lines. I'll get to mine at the end. Anka, you got any great lines?
The only one I thought was, because he only said it like 17 times, was, Dormammu, I'm here to bargain.
I'm here to negotiate.
I'm here to bargain.
Oh my,
it's Groundhog Day.
I'm here to bargain. I'm here to bargain. And like the first time he's like, you've come here to die, blah, blah, blah. And then the second time he goes, you've come here to... Wait
a minute.
What's going on here?
And I love how he actually like catches on. I'm just like, Dormammu, I'm here to negotiate. I'm going to go a little, just kind of philosophical on this one. The last line from the Ancient One, when I heard it, it just really hit me like a thunderbolt. It's actually at the end of her death scene, where, and she's in the astral plane, Strange chases after her, and they're just sitting there watching, like, this split second in time as, like, lightning is crashing all around them in, like, a slow-motion shot.
And snowflakes.
And then she says a line that actually really... Like, if you stop to, like, think about it, it's so profound. It's when she looks at him and she knows that that's her last moment because she's seen every moment. She's like, I can't see anything past this moment. So she knows she's going to die. So she tells him, and I had to write this down, death is what gives life meaning. To know your days are numbered, to know your time is short. I mean, that, to me, for some reason, that just hit home to me because...
And like sands through the hourglass.
Well, so and not only that, it's just to know that your time is numbered and that it's the end of your life is what gives your life definition. Because, you know, I hate this. For all of us right now, when you think of where we are in life, we can't see our end.
Hmm.
We only see where we are. We wonder how the hell we fit into this universe. But it's not until our death that we realize this is what it meant to other people.
Hmm.
This is how we fit in.
The circle is now complete.
Right.
If you go back to like certain Stoic philosophies, you have the idea that you don't know if you led a good life until it's over.
Exactly.
Like, you can't really determine that of someone until that point.
In the circle.
So, but again, it's just
the circle of life.
It's one of those moments. It's a moment of profoundness in this year.
That scene in particular had a couple of those little lines that were really good for that character, like the whole. Like, you've never learned the most important lesson, like, it's not about you.
Right.
Like, that was actually almost equally in that category.
That whole scene was just great. And
yeah.
Again,
it was well done.
Between the acid trip action scenes, the Buddhist training, and then that moment, I couldn't help but love all of this movie. And that just hammered it home for me. So, all right, favorite characters, Ankh.
I didn't really have a favorite character.
Okay. No one you connected with?
Nope.
All right.
Either Strange himself or Wong. Just because I love the actor for that.
Wong's a great straight character.
And yeah. On the other hand of that, you look at like the Ancient One as a character, and also amazing.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, that was going to be mine, was be the Ancient. Just I even like the fact that they made her Celtic instead of... Asian or whatever.
So it's like the whitewashing of making a old Asian man.
I don't
become
know. Like
a,
if we're talking about the whole whitewashing scandal, that I think they made the good choice. I think
they really did.
I thought it was good because she could have been like a druid or something.
Yeah. One of those things. Like Marvel was set in this place where you were either reinforcing like an old kind of crappy overdone stereotype or kind of changing it, and I think they made the good choice.
I think so too. I mean, just the fact that if you watch the whole movie play out, even if you didn't know the comics, she fits so well into this movie. It has left such an impact that it didn't matter. Like, they cast the right person for it.
Funny, she doesn't look Jewish.
Well, it's also like with the Shawshank Redemption, if you read the short story, Morgan Freeman was supposed to be a redheaded white Irish guy.
Morgan Freeman,
which is why when he says that line,
good makeup.
Which is why when he says that line to Tim Robbins, he's like, "Why do they call you red?" I don't know. It's because I'm Irish. That was actually the line from the book. So when he says that, it's a lot funnier.
That is a lot funnier.
So I mean, you know, it's just whoever reads the role better, or whoever's better for the role. So it works both ways. As far as like favorite characters for me, I'm torn because I loved watching Benedict Cumberbatch, which he's always a great actor. Yeah. I loved watching him go from an egotist to finding something better, you know, spiritual, in this world better than himself. I loved watching the Ancient One. And I love Mordo's just parallel between Strange. So I'm torn between the three of them. I kind of can't pick.
I kind of dig Mordo too, I got to be honest. By the end, especially by the end, I was like, I'm digging this guy.
By the time they do like a second Strange movie and they cast him as like the main villain for that,
cuz there's just so much irony, cuz he argued for him to be trained.
Oh, exactly. You know, yeah.
His line of there are too many sorcerers in the world.
Oh yeah,
that's gonna be a great villain.
The bill has come due.
Yeah, exactly.
You know he'll use that numerous times in the next movie.
Oh yeah, where he's talking about like these sorcerers that have created these aberrations that have created these issues. The city.
Not you have failed this city. It's your bill is due.
Yeah, I think
it's your Uncle Bingo. Time to pay the check.
Ramsay Bolton's about to die.
He's dead. I'm glad you're dead.
I don't know.
Thank you, and you're welcome for that second fan service break.
Yes. Well, on the subject of that, I think there's some parallels you can make to, kind of the Sith Jedi thing here a bit, right?
Sure, yeah.
There's definitely some things where, there's an interesting philosophical dynamic to it.
Because he's very absolute in his beliefs, right. and he only sees things one way. No rumor. There is no gray. There's black and there's white.
All right. So, favorite moments from the film. I'm going to say it. The fucking mirror dimension scene. That entire sequence. It's why I go to the movies. It's something new. It's something visual. It's something that when I saw the trailer for, I sought out a babysitter that day for opening weekend saying, I have to see this movie.
That was good. My favorite moment would probably be Strange versus Special K or Cal or whatever, Celsius.
Kelvin Celsius.
That whole fight scene with him and while he's still trying to, he's just barely learning to be a sorcerer and he's going up against this master and that whole scene is just
especially
phenomenal.
By the time you have the actual cape of
levitation, which is
which is almost a character number.
I like when he's running and he just keeps pulling it back. It's just
when the cloak is like flinging that guy against the wall.
Oh, just wrapped around his head,
just bouncing him on the ground,
just smashing his head against the floor as hard as it could.
That's mine as well. The New York.
Yeah.
When he gets attacked, and he throws the one girl into the desert, and then changes the dial, throws him into the jungle, and changes the. It's like
that is. God, I love it. I love this movie.
There are so many good scenes in this film, and that's going to be an issue for me picking because I love so many of these scenes. Just like we go back to the Ancient One's death, where you're just slowly looking out on the slowed down universe. You look at some of the ending fight scenes, where everything's going reversed and or in standstill, or
the use of magic in this kind of universe has never been this fully realized.
Exactly.
Now You See Me Too is probably just pissing its pants watching this movie.
Who's that?
The movie, the other magic film, the Jesse Eisenberg Now You See Me Too sequel that came out this year.
I can't imagine.
It's one of the worst movies of the year.
I haven't seen it.
It is garbage.
And then you combine that with like the dark dimension, with Dormammu in it, and you have this. And all kind of psychedelic sort of introduction to
it was
the mystical world.
It was the Avatar evil world.
Yeah. You have that moment where he's just kicked up into outer space and all of a sudden there's that butterfly. And he goes to reach for it and all of a sudden just gets pulled back.
Oh, and let's not forget one of the throwaway creepiest moments when he looks at his hand. And other
and
little
hands
just,
popping up.
Popping up. And then, how
entire
disturbing is that?
Well, then, there's that entire, his face made out of hands.
He falls through the pupil of his own eye.
Noticed is, on the trailer, he has his hand up, but his eye's still there.
I've never been on LSD, but if I was, that's what I would expect.
I really want to,
take like some kind of hallucinogens or like some psychedelic drugs.
You just want like a pot go brownie to see that.
And then go back to like see the 3D version of this
if
movie.
That's what, if that's what Doc Holliday was on when he threw a perfect game and he was seeing that kind of shit. Dude, I'm telling you what, he's fucking Zen master. Kind of crap.
That man deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
One of Caitlin's favorite scenes was when Rachel McAdams was talking to him about where have you been, and he talks about where he's like, I went and I found a monk. Oh, you joined a cult. And he's like, no.
Well, that's what a cult leader would say.
And he goes, it's not a cult. Well, that's what a cult person would say. And then he goes, I gotta go. So where you gotta go? Cult meeting.
that is a great scene.
Caitlin was laughing pretty hard at that.
There are some great. I mean, there's not a.
Oh yeah, like there's lot of just really subtle comedy in this film that does really well. Like it's almost dry humor.
I can't even find like any least favorite moments in this movie. There's not a moment in this film where I felt like it was slowing down. Just anything was just kind of dragging or wasn't connecting to the rest of the film.
I've got to say it. I don't want to say it. You guys are going to disagree with me. I'll be the one to go out on a limb.
I'll be ready to punch you.
It's got to be the groundhog scene at the end, dude.
I am going to disagree with you.
You are awful. You are awful.
I didn't like it.
I love watching Stephen Strange get killed over and over again. Like, it's amazing. No, I'm just more than happy to see it.
Dude, all I could think was Bill Murray showing up looking for the damn groundhog.
What's bad to remember that?
Actually, I think the worst scene for me was the one, right? It was the very end. And you're watching him, and all of a sudden he just walks slowly up the staircase. And then he just stands there in front of the window and looks at his hand, and then kind of just looks out the window, and you're like,
trailer fodder.
And then done.
That was the main scene they used, like, in the teaser trailer.
I was like, that was stupid.
I think that was supposed to be like his Batman moment or something. Yeah, standing just over Gotham.
It's trailer fodder. That's what it is. If I did have to pick a least favorite scene, it would be whiny Strange, like when Rachel McAdams goes to visit him after she's like, well, here's all this. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Or like right after the car crash.
Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 3.
Now that's when he's walking around acting like a badass.
He gets like the emo hair, which, oh god, Stephanie, why'd you show me that damn movie again yesterday? Fuck that movie!
Emo Spider-Man.
Oh god.
Well, you're that if you go to like where he's like right after the car crash and he's talking about like, no one could have done it better. You almost died.
You know what? You could have been like a consultant surgeon afterwards.
He's like, I could have done better.
Which is actually a good line for the character, but then he's whiny for like the next 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, if you're a surgeon, even if you don't have the use of your hands, and you've been this celebrated this long, there are other venues. You could be like in the board of directors, or you could be a consultant.
But when you're that high, you want to be that
right.
Person.
But when you're that much of an egotist.
That goes back to the personality thing. Right. Where he is egocentric.
Which, again, I can't like fault it for being a bad scene. Like, it's the one moment I'm just like, okay, you're going to go to the like Tibet soon. Shut the hell up and do it.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think it's a bad scene, but it is like, it shows him being a shitty character.
Right.
And
yeah,
it's
but.
Just when there's this.
So, but as far as like an origin story, how would you guys rate this as far as like just, you know?
Not really knowing much about the comics. Like I said, it's.
Well, I mean, like, compared
movie.
To other origin stories, like the first Iron Man, the first Batman, the first. I don't want to say Man of Steel, but.
I would say it's probably. I'd say Iron Man is better. The origin story, I like that better. I liked Batman's origin story better. But I like Captain America's origin story better. So maybe after that, maybe I'd like it better than Thor's movies and Thor's.
Well, because Thor's boring. Well, as a character, Thor is boring. Yeah, I hate to say it. He's boring.
I'm trying to think of the other origin story. Hulk, much better than Hulk.
Yeah. Well, we still never got that Black Widow origin story or the Hawkeye origin story.
We don't need a Hawkeye origin. Let's be honest.
But we need a Black Widow origin story.
No,
yes, we do.
We just need our tits origin story. That's
well,
we
which,
need.
You know, so. When I watched Age of Ultron again, what's funny is, like, if you watch Iron Man 2, the first Avengers, and then, like, Winter Soldier, and then Age of Ultron, her, like, Wonder Bra gets, like, more pronounced as the sequels go on.
So
the point of Age of Ultron, you're like, holy shit, are those, like,
when she was doing Age of Ultron, she was pregnant.
She had a little work done.
Well, she was pregnant during Age of Ultron, so well, she then, was, That's why she was a little bigger than normal.
Okay, Hank, you've just actually answered my question as to why she looked more like an, you know, prominent.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like if he did something like around, a Black Widow movie, it'd be a lot like a Nick Fury thing.
Well, like the bodysuit was just a little bit more, like, strained at the zipper.
Excuse me, I need some pads. I'm leaking.
Costume designer's going, oh, God, get another one. She
she just leaked on Vision.
That's where, like, the He's $300 blind. Million dollar budget went, was, like, specifically for her costume.
Suddenly, I just had a vision of basketball and him pouring.
You're excited. Feel these nipples.
All right. Anyway.
So where the hell were we on this? Okay.
We were talking about origin stories. I answered mine.
Okay, so you've got yours, Aaron, as far as like an origin.
For me, this is probably one of Marvel's best standalone films.
Right.
This actually might be Marvel's like third best film behind Civil War and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And Winter Soldier is technically kind of a sequel, so it's not really an origin.
It's not really, yeah.
So yeah, for me, this is probably, like, it still suffers from a lot of the same problems Marvel has with its other origin films.
Right.
And a lot of its standalone films. But overall, I think it kind of took the mechanics of the last ones and what worked and kind of improved upon it and kind of introduced new elements. And it had, you know, it had some moments where it's like it really kind of stepped beyond just like a comic book film. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about with the film or scene with the Ancient One dying. Like,
yeah.
It has some moments where you it's can come some, like, back to it.
Legitimately good dramatic film moments. Well, not just, in there. Yeah.
Yeah, not only that, you have great casting, great acting, and you have, like, just amazingly well done just action sequences and, like, special effects that accompany, like, a really interesting character and storyline.
So, Hank, in the scheme of the Marvel Cinematic Introduction films as an origin story,
I'm going to say fourth, maybe.
Behind
Iron Man, Captain America, and Ant-Man.
Okay. Which is funny, like, you bringing up Ant-Man, that's actually what I was thinking of with this. It was, like, the origin story is not just Ant-Man, but the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. Forever.
Because,
oh, yeah. I guess that does count.
We kind of know the origins of Iron Man, and thanks to Roger Corman or whatever production company in the 90s, we know kind of the origin story of Captain America thanks to that shitty movie with the guy from Space Mutiny of the Mystery Science Theater route. So the only origins we didn't really know but needed to connect with were really good with, like, Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is up there with those. But just for me, like, I have a personal connection with that.
Actually,
man seeking out the mystic arts kind of origin, because he's important in the Marvel universe. Like, a lot of the comic, like, the really well-known comic readers of the time will know Doctor Strange, but for a lot of us, we like the four of us collectively did not even read the comics. Mm-hmm. Don't know anything going in. By the time we came out, we know about you know, the Cloak of Levitation and Mordor and Dormammu and all the stuff, and it just
all the fun things, right? That have really
it opened
names.
Up. It opened up the mystic world to us and made it fun. So it had a lot that it had to live up to, and for a standalone, I think it's probably one of the best of the standalone Marvel films.
Yeah, I actually hadn't considered Guardians when we were talking about it, but I think it's up there with it.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else do we have here?
Living Tribunal?
I don't know. Should we even bring up the fact that the Living Tribunal, the weapon of Mordor, is actually... It was just more of like an Easter egg that I found that staff that he had is actually a reference to a Marvel villain, which maybe down the road might be more of a mystic villain. Because the Living Tribunal is apparently one of, like, the big mystic villains up there with, like, Galactus or what was the Silver Surfer main villain?
That was Galactus.
Or Thanos. Whoever. I mean, he's one of the big cosmic baddies of the Marvel Universe.
Well,
so
his name alone would definitely, you know, fit his new personality of time to pay the bill. If, you know, Living Tribunal, you're gonna have,
and Mordo is himself wielding his weapon. So of course we've got, hell, even more of a connection to what could be a big baddie for Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah.
Hmm. So,
well, this film had a couple Easter eggs. Like, you even see, like, Avengers Tower, like, in one scene.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think Marvel's actually been really good about having like those little tiny Easter eggs that they kind of plant throughout it, like prepping for other films or referencing older ones.
I have to bring this up. I've actually worked on a couple of movie sets before. The guy that played that fledgling surgeon that Doctor Strange kept, like, you know, just
Nick,
overruling
the dude
who's Nick,
like, cover your watch.
Right. Who it turns
which actually
out
is a good scene. As well.
It is. It's a good scene. And, you know, there's, which I even found out, he actually, like, later in the comics becomes kind of a aspiring wizard, but at best is a C student.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't really become much, but he does kind of do some villainous stuff. I actually got to meet him on a movie set a couple years ago, and the guy is really good, and he's in one of my favorite movies of Hugo, which, for any of our fans out there who's actually listened to our five favorite movies of all time, Hugo is one of my five favorite movies of all time. And, yeah, just the fact that seeing him in there and realizing, oh, I've got, like, all these other ones. I actually went back and did, like, a connection of, like, all these actors that I've worked with on set that have been, like, had a Marvel Universe connection. I've apparently worked with, like, 9 actors that have, like, been connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So.
Cool.
Very cool.
I'm just, you know, I'm kind of bragging, but...
You think?
A Jeez. Little, yeah.
Way to be modest there, John. I've worked with 9.
Okay, granted...
Not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, 7, 8, but 9.
Okay, granted one of them 9. Was Kate Mara from Fantastic Four remake, but...
Do we count the Fantastic Four films in the...
God, if I could kick a movie in the nuts, I...
Well, there we go, back to the male genitalia. Yeah.
He keeps kicking me in the dick.
Oh no!
Why? Mm. Why does he keep kicking?
You have a fascination with dicks. Anyway, all right, moving on, sir.
You're really reading into my subtext here.
I'm not reading into anything here, pal.
All right, so with that said, I think that's like a perfect segue into kind of our final thoughts. So, Hank, I'll start with you. What do you want to do? Final thoughts?
I saw it twice in one day. So it's obviously not a bad movie. It's not my favorite Marvel movie of all time. It's not my favorite superhero movie of all time.
Okay, which is your favorite Marvel and which is your favorite superhero, I have to ask?
Well, it's a toss-up for me between Man of Steel and Green Lantern for the DC side. And on the Marvel side, I really liked... Winter Soldier.
Good one.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier is probably the best so far, yeah. But as, like, grade-wise, what would you rank... Where would you rank Doctor Strange? What grade does Mr.
What
Doctor
grade?
Get?
Didn't we already do grade? We gave 1 through 10 already, didn't we?
Oh, 1 through 10, but, like, letter grades. Like, if you were in school and he had to, you know, his...
Oh, yeah. Like I said when we came out the first time, B+. Right around there.
Okay. Aaron.
I actually really love this film. Like, for me, this is one of the top Marvel films, and I think it really redid, like, a lot of the basic mechanics for, like, their standalone films, and I think they improved upon it. And there's a lot I really love about this film, and I think makes it really rewatchable. So I'd give that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of going back and forth between, like, B+, A-, because... As a lot of people have been talking about lately about superhero fatigue, which is just kind of like the exhaustion, you know, just we're kind of... We've had about 6 major comic book adaptations this year alone, whereas like 15 years ago we were lucky if we got 2. So there's a lot of us, it's like, it's kind of hard to see it as an event anymore, like we're getting so many great origin stories or so many, you know, tie-ins, crossovers, all this stuff that we're just... We're excited to see, but we're wondering how far can it go. This is a movie that, like, to introduce a character with just kind of this much of a... I hate to say it, kind of exhaustion, almost, for me, personally. I was completely entertained, completely engulfed, really excited, loved the world, loved the visuals. Like, this is a movie that... If I could afford a babysitter more, I would go see this movie in 3D as many times as I could. So yeah, definitely an A- for me, because if anyone out there, if any of our listeners actually have a bit of like franchise or superhero fatigue, this is a movie just to go see, just to enjoy. So.
All right. I'm kind of along the lines of thinking about it. It's a B to B plus. It's not the best Marvel movie out there, in my opinion, but I will say, you know, it only has the flaws that I do point out, I think, are minor overall. I will also say that it does open up the door to a whole new realm, of possibilities as far as the Marvel Cinematic Universe is concerned. It opens up the door to the whole mysticism side, you know, that whole, you know, it creates the world of impossible suddenly becomes possible through it. And there, I think it opens up, I think it's going to allow the writers to do some cool stuff.
Mm. You know, well, you set up a multiverse in this, within the universe, essentially.
Well, yeah. A lot of multiverse. I mean, you could easily create your Flashpoint, you know, through this or whatever.
Flashpoint. Wrong guy.
No, I'm serious. I mean, the same kind of deal. So.
Well, a multiverse variant of it instead of like a time travel variant.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it opens, it expands the galaxy that much more, the universe that much
more. It might explain the X-Men reboot we're going to see like 7 years
down the line. Oh my God, don't get me started on
which,
that.
And you know, the other thing is like with the Living Tribunal is actually kind of the guardian of multiverse. Like, he's the one that keeps all of it in check.
Oh, really?
Which, I had, you know, of course, I had to look up and find out who the hell these people are.
Right, yeah, because we're all kind of learning. But yeah, I give it a nice B+. Yeah, good movie, definitely worth seeing. You definitely want to see it in the theater just for the special effects alone.
God, 3D if you can.
3D if Jesus you can. Christ. I mean,
and on like any kind of hallucinogen you can take before seeing it in 3D.
But honestly, I haven't seen it in 3D yet. I want to now, but even standard, it's awesome to see on the big screen. Just that whole Inception gone crazy, you know. Jesus. So.
Too bad theaters aren't open this late right now. I would kind of want to see it right again right now. I was just thinking about that.
Oh, no.
Not me.
Let us in.
Yeah, I can't do it three times.
Eckenbauer's all tripped out.
Like, holy shit, that's too much for me.
His head is multiverses bent enough for one day. So I'm clearly not on Twitter as much, so where can...
Okay, you can find us, just go to google.com, put in the number 4 Midwest Guys, you can find our Facebook page there, you can find our Twitter account there, you can find us on iTunes through that as well. Also, if you like what you heard here, find us on iTunes or on Stitcher or Onecast or any other...
Or YouTube.
And if you like what you hear, make sure that you're subscribing, whether it's to our iTunes feed...
Facebook account.
Make sure you like us there. Subscribe to our YouTube page as well, and that way you'll every time we release a new podcast, you'll get an alert to it on your phone or whatever. So you'll be able to know exactly when we release these things. So, get out there, find us. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. I've got I'm working on a 4-part Rogue One miniseries. Podcast event coming up after the first of the year. I have finally finished Luke Cage, so our Netflix reviews of the Defender series so far.
Jesus Christ, when are you going to watch Stranger Things?
I've got it. Yeah, that's next on my list.
It's only what, like 8 episodes?
It's like, yeah, was it 8 episodes?
Yeah, well, it's next. But yeah, we'll do a Stranger Things review. So there's a lot of good material. Plus, we do our weekly.
God, I'm like fucking like chomping at the bit to review that show. It's fucking awesome.
Okay, I promise, John. I'll try to make time.
After that, you're just like Westworld, Mr. Robot.
Oh Jesus! Yeah, I'm covered on Mr. Robot. I mean, I'm Stranger Things, I've got the HBO Go. If you guys want to come over,
okay. So, but yeah, there's just a ton of stuff to that we've got coming out. We also do our weekly Rebels and our Marvel DC Kings, which are weekly podcasts right now. So there's a lot of programming. A lot to check out, so please, please, please do so.
We are here to geek for you.
Absolutely. All right.
Take
us out there, Mr. Host.
Sure. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for having me over again and, you know, allowing me to host. I think this is my first hosting time.
This is your first hosting,
so, yeah,
nice
thank
job.
You.
Well done.
So, Mr. Ankenbauer, thank you for coming in.
Anytime, man.
I know you're between like your third and fourth viewing to see this.
Yeah, yeah.
Aaron, thank you.
No problem.
And Mr. B. Willie.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
And this is the Dirty Jay-Z, thanking you all for joining us again for another podcast of Four Midwest Guys, and we will see you next time.